and welcome to Samurai Songwriting, where you will learn to master the art and precision of writing hit songs. In this issue, our very first issue of Samurai Songwriting, we will break it up into a number of sections. First, we will discuss the psychology of songwriting, the inner game of songwriting. Next, we will explore songwriting tools. These are things that can improve your songwriting workflow and productivity. Then we are going to discuss songwriting techniques. These are strategies that you can use to improve your songwriting immediately. Finally, we're going to include songwriter questions. Here we'll answer questions that have been submitted to us online. We'll also scatter some valuable songwriting tips throughout the issue. So let's get started. Let's talk about the way of the samurai songwriter for a minute. In Japan, there is still a great deal of admiration for the samurai and their rigid code of honor. Much more than their role as warriors, they represent the very roots of Japanese civilization. Samurai culture became the core of Japanese values. Here at Samurai Songwriting, we offer artistic principles to live by. In particular, I want to talk about the principle of respect for others. It's very easy to let words come out of your mouth without thinking. Words like, "I hate this particular artist," or "I can't stand this song," or "this sucks." But the only thing words like that do is create more hate and ugliness in the world. You and I both know that we will never get rid of every negative influence or every negative word, but as samurai songwriters, we can choose not to contribute to this. And this is why we practice respect for others and, in particular, respect for other artists. Everybody's doing the best they can. If you can see where someone is moving in the wrong direction or in a direction you wouldn't choose, you can witness that without contributing to the disrespect of this artist and ultimately the disrespect to yourself. Music is a social art. It takes musicians and listeners. Among musicians, there is a great deal of insecurity. It's a very vulnerable act to share your music with someone, and this causes us to put up walls and harden ourselves so that we don't get hurt if someone doesn't like our music. And for this reason, we should give other musicians and artists unconditional support, so they have the opportunity and foundation to grow and improve without having to battle the hateful words of others. In a practical sense, if you tell me that you hate the music of a particular artist, what's to make me think that you wouldn't say the same thing of me when I'm not around? If I tell you that I don't like a certain style of music, but you really enjoy that style, then the connection between us is broken. Trust is broken. But if the words that come out of our mouths are beautiful, then we attract musicians that want to share in that beauty. Bring the values of respect for others and understand what it is to respect yourself. Then you will know the way of the samurai songwriter. The inner game of songwriting. Songwriting is about 80% psychology and 20% technique. We'll use the 80-20 rule over and over again. It basically goes like this. 20% of the things you do account for 80% of the value in your life. 20% of the songs you write will be listened to by 80% of your audience. The other 80% of the songs you write will only be listened to by 20% of your audience. 20% of the melodies you write will end up in a completed song. 20% of the lyrics you write will end up being used. You get the picture. Back to the psychology of songwriting. You can learn every single songwriting technique in the book, but what's going to make the biggest difference to you is your psychology. And to talk about psychology, we have to talk about language, because your mind uses words to think. Your songs use words to communicate their ideas. If you're not clearly communicating ideas to yourself, then you're not going to communicate ideas clearly to your listeners. Now I'm going to give you the 5 most common songwriting problems. Most of the music coaching and teaching I do involves information gathering. It's important for me to clearly identify what musical challenges my students are having so that I don't fix something that isn't broken, and so I impact the problem in a way that is truly useful. Chances are, not only in your songwriting, but in your self-talk, you are unconsciously hitting delete. With all of my music students and coaching clients, I look for 5 specific deletions in their language. This first applies to the things they say to me when they represent their challenges, but it can also be applied to the way you use language in your songwriting. The first of these language deletions is called a simple deletion. A simple deletion is when something important is missing out of a sentence. For example, I can't do it. Students often use the words it and that in sentences with simple deletions. The solution is to recover the information that is missing with open-ended questions. If they say, I can't do it, I ask, what exactly can't you do? If they say, I can deal with it, what exactly will you deal with? I get a lot of questions by email, and many of them assume that I'm in the exact same location as they are, looking at the exact same computer monitor, reading the same web page, or what have you. They say, how does this work without ever defining exactly what this is? That word, this, leaves out the most important information. Now imagine writing a song where you leave out this kind of information. Your listener won't have any idea what you're talking about. That's why it's a good idea to get into the listener's shoes and listen with fresh ears. Ask yourself, does this make sense? Notice your own simple deletions and question them by asking, what or where or when exactly? The second type of deletion is called an unspecified referential index. A referential index is the person or thing that takes action or is affected by an action. When this is unspecified, all that is left is something being done but nobody doing it. For example, mistakes were made. It's very passive language. This kind of language can be a coping mechanism to absolve oneself of responsibility. This can be useful if you're trying not to get in trouble with your boss, but it can be a tactic we use with ourselves too, to soften our own desire to self-actualize. We see ourselves not living up to the standards that we aspire to, and we soften our responsibility so we don't feel bad, when what we really need to do is recognize our own incongruence and just get it back in line. Words like him, her, they, and one are not specific. Maybe you're using these words in your lyrics without fully establishing who they specify. You can probably see how this could confuse them. How it could confuse the listener. Passive verbs are another good example of this pattern. A passive verb says that something was done rather than a person did something. Passive language is a no-no when writing lyrics. It doesn't draw the listener in with powerful action verbs. Here's how to recover unspecified referential indexes. When you say, mistakes were made, ask, who made the mistakes? When you hear, it seems like an impossible task, ask, seems to whom? Impossible to whom? Notice your own unspecified referential indexes and question them by asking, who exactly? The third type of language deletion is an unspecified verb. An unspecified verb deletes exactly how an event happened. For example, my songwriting is progressing. To recover the deleted information, ask, how exactly is your songwriting progressing? I can deal with it. How specifically will you deal with it? Notice your own unspecified verbs and question them by asking, how exactly? The fourth type of deletion is a judgment. Judgments are statements of opinion which are expressed as if they were facts. That was awful. I'm sure you'll recognize this one. Musicians are notorious for giving judgments. When students express judgments, which is frequently, I question the values that lie behind these judgments and uncover who is doing the judging. That was awful. Who says and by what standard is it awful? This is bad music. Well, who says and by what standard is it bad? Think of a lyric that goes like this. She was a really good kisser. Blah. Now, take the generic word good and tell the listener how she kissed. She got her lipstick on my collar. It's much better. That line implies so much more and gives you a clear visual of how she kissed. Unknown judgments can cause trouble. Prejudice is the result of thoughtless judgments. Notice your own value judgments and question their validity by asking, by what standard am I making this judgment? The final language deletion is a comparison. A comparison compares one thing with another in order to evaluate it. For example, I did that badly. I'm very aware of words like better, worse, easier, good, and bad, and I make sure there is a basis for comparison. When there is not, I ask about the comparison. I did that badly. Well, badly compared to what? Comparisons can be very important. They are often used to motivate people by setting a standard to aspire to. However, the standard may be unrealistic or not appropriate, especially if you're comparing yourself to your most admired musician. Notice your own comparisons and question them by asking, compared with what? Asking questions allows me to gather information that specifies someone's experience in order to get a full and detailed representation of that experience. When students and clients offer me a challenge to solve, knowing what questions to ask makes all the difference. This will be the key to your own inner game of songwriting. If your language isn't empowering, or if it isn't helping you find solutions to your challenges, then there's a good chance that you are making one of these five mistakes. Remember, they are simple deletions, unspecified referential indexes, unspecified verbs, judgments, and comparisons. Moving on to songwriting tools. Two tools that are often overlooked are a good rhyming dictionary and a thesaurus. The rhyming dictionary I recommend is The Complete Rhyming Dictionary by Clement Wood. It has more rhymes than any other book, as well as one, two, and three-syllable rhymes. But owning a rhyming dictionary is the easy part. After all, it's only about $8. How to use it is another thing. I've given you a family rhyme chart to help you get the most out of your rhyming dictionary. When looking for rhymes, perfect rhymes are the first place to start. But when you've exhausted all possibilities, or in the case that you don't want a perfect rhyme, using this chart will help you. Tip: when wouldn't you want a perfect rhyme? Well, perhaps you want to create a sense of incompletion, so you get close but don't quite close the loop. That keeps the listener anticipating and hoping that you eventually resolve the tension somehow. We're not going to get into rhyme this issue. We'll save that for another time. For now, just know that when you are searching for rhymes, begin with perfect rhymes. That is, if the word ends in a voiced plosive, you start with the exact same sound and then move to the other voiced plosives. Then you move to its partners, the unvoiced plosives. Next, you move even farther away to its companions, the voiced fricatives, then the unvoiced fricatives, and so on. I have this chart pinned on my wall for a quick reminder. Every thesaurus is not created equal. The best thesaurus for expanding word choices and coming up with new ideas is the original Roget's thesaurus. Why it's such a fantastic writing tool is because it groups words according to classification. This gives you a big picture view of your song's meaning. You may think you're writing about a specific love affair, but when you dig around, you can see that the words you are choosing belong to the class of victory. This can help you set the tone for the rest of the song and at least open some doors to new ideas. Then there's computer thesauruses, which can be used for quick hits. My personal favorite is Visual Thesaurus. It represents words and ideas similar to Roget's, but in a mind map fashion, with ideas branching off of other ideas. Still, as useful as it is, it's not the first place to go. Roget's wins. But the tool I really want to talk about is the songwriting tool chart. This chart's main purpose is to build contrast into your song. But it also makes an excellent tool to analyze other people's writing, something that here at Samurai Songwriting we advocate strongly. You find the songwriters that you like the most, and then you learn how they do what they do. Let me show you how to use this chart. The first column is the tool column. In that column, we have songwriting tools for contrast, like note length, phrase length, and so on. The other columns are for each song section, We have the verse, pre-chorus, chorus, and bridge. Let's jump right in and use this chart to analyze a song, then you'll see how to use it in your own writing. We're going to analyze the song Into the Great Wide Open by Tom Petty. Let's take the first tool, note length, and listen to the first verse. We'll also count the length of the phrase in bars.
Eddie waited till he finished high school. He went to Hollywood, got a tattoo. He met a girl out there with a tattoo too. The future was wide open.
Notice that the note length was primarily eighth notes and the phrase length was two bars. One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and. So you would fill out the tool sheet with the information we just learned. Note length is eighth notes and phrase length is two bars. You can use whatever language works for you to fill out this chart. There isn't just one way to do it. Let's think about the space tool. There wasn't much space between phrases, only about one beat. So you can put on your chart one quarter note, one beat, or very little, or something like that. If we think back, we also know that there were four phrases. So we can put four in the number of phrases row of our chart. Let's listen again. This time, we'll listen to the chord progression and the shape of the melody. Ideally, you should listen to a song once through for each tool. For time's sake, I'm going to multitask, but you will get the most out of this if you actually give a song a number of listens.
They've moved into a place they both could.
Notice that he's holding on E minor with a descending half step pattern like this, a very common chord progression. A minor, same sort of thing, but a little different. G, F, C. What did you notice about the melody? It's going down and then coming back up, a descending arc. So we can fill out our chart with the chord progression and the shape of the melody. How about the lyric content? He was telling a story. You can fill out the lyric content of the tool chart with the word story or whatever you like. The only other row we can fill out at this point is the rhyme scheme. The first verse has an imperfect rhyme with the words school, tattoo, to, and open. So you would notate that A-A-A-X. All words that rhyme use the same letter. If a new rhyme is introduced, you would use the next letter, for instance, A-B-A-B. If a rhyming position is not rhymed, then you use the letter X. And what we have is the rhyme scheme of A-A-A-X. He keeps the same rhyme scheme for the second verse, afford, door, chords, and limit. Tip: a common rhyme mistake is to change rhyme schemes in your verses. Rhyme schemes are another type of hook in your song. You create expectations for your listener. If you intend to surprise them, that's fine, but there are other rhyme schemes designed to do exactly that, which we will get into in another issue. But you still want your rhyme schemes to match between verses. This gives your listener something to hang on to. It helps them follow along, and it helps them sing along because they have this structure to hang the words on. They will memorize your lyrics faster if you give them this structure. Let's listen to the chorus. This time, we'll begin with the chord progression and the melody. G, C, D, very common chord progression. G, E minor, D, A minor, a little bit altered there. G, C, D, again. Now we change it. G, F, E minor, A, and then this tag, C to G, which we've seen before. Okay, so we've got a new chord progression. Once we've entered it on the chart, we can look at the new chords. We'd seen every chord before in the verse except for the chords D and A. Now we've got some contrast. Put that information on your chart. What else can we notice about the chord progression? Even though it was the same length, eight bars, it moved much faster. each chord lasted two beats, whereas in the verse we hung out on a single chord for four bars. That gave the chorus a lift. Moving the chords faster gives it more energy. What else can we notice? The verse began in E minor. The chorus began in G, the relative major key of E minor. Tip: one of the best ways to create contrast between your verse and chorus is to start on a different chord. If your verse is major, try the relative minor in the chorus. If your verse is minor, as in this song, then you can start the chorus with its relative major. Even if we were to just have used G, C, and D the whole song through, we could start the verse on the 4 chord, or C, and start the chorus on the root chord, or G. We could even switch that around if we wanted. This is really the fastest way to create contrast between song sections. Let's focus on the melody now. Both verse and chorus have a phrase length of 2 bars. The verse was a G major pentatonic scale. When we move to the chorus, we do a few very significant things. We add a new note, C, B, C, D. We also go higher than we've ever gone before with this D. And we change the shape. Instead of a descending arc, we have an ascending arc. Talk about melodic contrast. This is an excellent example. Tip: one great way to give your chorus a lift is to make it higher than the verse. If you make it lower than the verse, you run the risk of the melody feeling like it falls. If it falls, the emotional intensity can fall too. This isn't what we want out of a chorus. It's supposed to be the emotional high point of the song. It's a perfect metaphor. If you want it to rise, you make it go up. If you want it to be the high point, you make it the highest melodic point. Notice that the note length changed too. We've added some quarter notes. And how perfect that they land on great and wide, into the great wide open. That's prosody, when the music supports the meaning. So you can put eighths and quarter notes for the note length in the chorus column. The phrase length stayed the same. The verse had a phrase length of 2 bars, and so does the chorus. But the amount of space changed. We have about 2.5 or 3 beats of space between phrases. Aside from creating more contrast, this gives the listener time to think about what is being said. And what was being said? Like most great choruses, it was commentary on the verse story. So you can put commentary in the lyric content row. The only thing left to cover is the rhyme scheme. It changed. We've gone to ABAB. Open, blue, open, clue. More contrast. Perhaps you can see how useful this songwriting tool chart is. We've learned quite a few songwriting techniques and tips just by analyzing a single song. If you dive into this song a little deeper, you could find even more information that could help you as you write your own songs. In fact, I can think of a couple more songwriting techniques that are demonstrated in this song that I didn't cover. But if you do the exact same thing we've done here today, with even more artists and more songs, imagine what you could learn. Imagine what you could learn by using this songwriting tool chart in your own writing. Print some copies out and keep them nearby. Try to create as much contrast as is necessary to keep your song interesting. It's easy to get lost in the details of songwriting. Having a chart like this can help you zoom out so you see the big picture. You will learn a lot about your own writing. You will start to notice patterns in your writing. If your songs start to sound the same, you might notice that every melody you write is 2 bars long and all 1/8 notes. Or maybe you write a lot of ascending arcs. Do you see the power in understanding your own processes and patterns? Contrast between song sections is one thing. Contrast between songs is another. We only covered using this chart on a single song, but it's just as useful to analyze 2 or more songs side by side. Keep a spreadsheet to use as a database of your songs and the songs you've analyzed of your favorite songwriters. Then, you can search your songs for 2-bar phrases and find out the exact percentage of your songs that use them. If you get stuck in a rut and it's not instantly obvious why, you can find out by exploring your own writing patterns. The bottom line is this: you now have a tool to find out how the greatest songwriters do what they do and to help you do the same. We've covered a lot of information so far, but we're not finished yet. We still have songwriting techniques and questions from songwriters to come. If I asked you, what was the most important part of the song, what would you say? If I asked you where you should put your priorities when songwriting, what would you answer? Even though every part of a song is important, we can still place priorities. We can still follow a hierarchy of relative importance. For our purposes as samurai songwriters, we will place the number one priority on the song title. It's the song title that gets listed on the charts. It's the song title that people search for on the internet or in iTunes. It's the song title that gets repeated the most in a song. And it's the song title that usually contains the hook, the part that grabs the listener's attention. So let's get to work finding out what makes a great title and how to write them. A great title has emphasis. It stands out from the rest of the song. We can do this melodically, by bringing it higher, by making it higher than the rest of the song. Lyrically, by making the words relevant, interesting, and easy to remember. Rhythmically, through accents, natural rhythms, aligning word stress with the rhythm, note length. We can do it harmonically by putting the title over unique and contrasting chords. And through form, by setting the title apart using space and by putting it in natural spotlights, beginnings and endings of phrases. But where do we begin? Here's a few places to begin when writing song titles. Start with an existing title. Pull up the Billboard charts, or better yet, and not many people know this, if you open iTunes and go to the iTunes store, look for Browse under the Quick Links menu on the right side of the store. Once you're there, you'll see a list item called Charts. Here you have the Billboard Hot 100, Top Country, and Top R&B charts dating back to, in the case of the Hot 100, 1946. If you want to write a hit song with staying power, modeling a song that stood the test of time is the way to go. Let's go back to 1955. The number two song of the year was Rock Around the Clock. You probably know it. What's good about that title? The first and last word rhyme, which ties it together and makes it more memorable. It's visual, it's active. You can picture the action. The word rock was a new word for the times. It was fresh and exciting and represented a new age of youth culture. We could go on and on, but what we want to do is emulate this title. First, let's just look at the sentence structure. Verb, preposition, object. The subject is the implied you. Let's just replace some words, keeping the same amount of syllables and word stress. I'll start with the preposition, around. It has two syllables, with the stress on the second syllable. So we get quite a few choices. About, behind, toward, above, below, across, beneath, beside, against, between, along, among, without, and before. Now, let's go to our trusty thesaurus to find the rest of the sentence. We can start with either the verb or the object. I'll start with the verb because this will set the tone and I want to try to rhyme it like the title we're modeling. This time, I opened my thesaurus to the synopsis of categories to find a class of words that has power, something active that invokes an emotional response. I settled on defiance. That has some power to it. It could be used to describe an underdog story, a powerful plot. How about dare, slap, yell, shout, throw? Now I'll get out my rhyming dictionary and try to complete some titles with the options I have. Dare without a care. Dare among the scared. Dare until you tear. Slap against the pack. slapping at the gnat, slapping against the tack. So far, I really only like Dare Without a Care. It could be about a person who's trying to live life to the fullest in a world that tells people to conform. You could write an entire song using this title, and all we have to do is change the melody to something that's more fitting to the subject matter, and we can work a hot chorus out of that. Let's do some more like this. We'll go to 1969. The number 3 hit is I Can't Get Next to You by The Temptations. Without digging in too far, let's just see if it can inspire something quickly. How about I Can't Forget Your Face? It's a song about trying to get over someone. Or I Wish I Asked Your Name. You're singing to someone you saw in passing, but didn't have the courage to ask their name. Sly and the Family Stone had 2 hits in the top 10 that year. Hot Fun in the Summertime. Really fast, what can you come up with? Cool Breeze Through the Autumn Leaves. It's a nostalgia song. Everyday People becomes Working Class Heroes. For all the blue-collar workers in the world, where would we be without them? How else can you find good titles? Books are a great place to start. Movie titles. Really, all you have to do is start paying attention. A sentence from a random conversation heard on a crowded street can be the next big hit. A witty line from a movie can make you grab your notebook. How about song title mashups? Let's Dance by David Bowie and A Thousand Years by Sting can become Let's Dance for a Thousand Years. Straight from the Heart by Bryan Adams and Heart of Glass from Blondie can become Straight from the Heart of Glass. I'm sure you can think of other ways to come up with new and interesting song titles. In fact, that's what will make yours unique. Designing your own techniques so that you can generate many ideas fast. Then narrow the list down to one single title and finish a song around it. Just remember, make your song titles interesting, memorable, and relevant. You're on your way. Hey, that could be a good song title. Now we're going to pull up some questions that were submitted to us online, and we'll do our best to answer them. Our first question is a very simple question, and it's this. How do you start? Well, let's talk about that question for a second. Let's look at the actual language involved. How do you start? Well, what do we know from what we learned today? There's something missing, right? How do you start what? I'm assuming they say they're talking about how do you start a song. Well, how do you start a song? You can only start with either something you've already got or you start with nothing. And if you have nothing, well, we've given you a whole bunch of techniques today to actually get going. You could analyze a song from one of your favorite songwriters, and you could model it. You could model the phrase length, the note length, the progressions. You could basically rewrite their song. And in fact, that is a very good technique, to rewrite someone else's song. You can keep the rhythm of the melody the same, but change the notes of the melody and change the chord progression. You could keep the chord progression the same and change the melody entirely. I mean, you get the idea. There's so many things you can do there. But this idea of where do you start, a lot of it just comes from not knowing the actual pieces of the song to know what you can begin with. You can only really begin with a title, a chorus, a verse, a pre-chorus, a bridge. But if you really think about it, you start with one word, you start with one note or one chord, one rhythm, and one harmony. That's basically all you can work with. So going to the hit song model that I know you received as a bonus for buying Samurai Songwriting for subscribing, that's where you start. Print that on your wall and just begin with something. Just throw a dart and pick. If it's lyrics, well, all right, let's be a little more specific. And this is really going to help you being specific. Let's look at an actual piece of the lyrics, not just lyrics as a whole, because that's kind of big. Where do you start? It just doesn't really focus you. So let's start on the title lyrics. And we've given you a few techniques today to actually do that. You could start somewhere else if you feel like it. You could start on the verse lyrics. And there you just start one word at a time. and just start letting things flow. Don't worry about things being perfect. And I think that's one of the problems that stops people from starting in the first place, is thinking that the song has to be perfect as it comes out of your pen or your imagination. That's rarely the case. Most likely, it's going to be what we've talked about, the 80-20 rule. 80% of the material you write will not get used. It's writing for the garbage can. So that's what you need to do, is start writing for the garbage can, knowing that if you write 100 words, only 20 of them will get used. And if a song needs at least 100 words, well, then do the math. You figure out how many words you need to write and just start writing them. And chances are, in the beginning, your percentage is not going to be as high as when you get more experience. So it might be 10-90 for you. It might be only 10% of what you write gets used. It might be only 1% of what you write gets used. In fact, you might go through a long spell where nothing gets used, and then you might go through a good spell where everything you write gets used. So you can really zoom in on this and zoom out, and that's a technique that we use a lot, is zooming in and zooming out. Zooming out of and looking at the entire hit song from a whole, looking at your entire writing process from a whole, and looking at the details of it, the details of the song and the details of your writing. It really helps to focus in, focus out, and, you know, just constantly be moving back and forth so you get your bearings and you don't get lost in the details and you don't think it's too big and you never start anywhere. So first of all, the question, we'll get back to it, how do you start? I would start by looking at your own language. When you ask a question, what kind of answer do you think you're going to get? Think about that first. What kind of answer would you want? You want something more specific. And this is a good thing for when you're asking for songwriting critiques. Don't ask somebody, so what'd you think? Because the information that might come out of their mouth might, for one, hurt you. It also might not be all that useful to you. Because maybe they don't know anything about songwriting. Maybe you're asking your friend, what'd you think? What you really want to do is ask them specifics. So if you're interested in the lyrics, if they made sense, ask the person specifically, did those lyrics make sense to you? If they say no, well, then you know you got to work, you know, fix that. If they say yes, well, then you know that part of the song is good. And then you can move on further and say, well, did the melody sound good? Did you like the melody, you know? And they might say, well, this part seemed kind of odd. And that might be good feedback. You might say, oh, you know what? That part did kind of bug me. I think I'll go back and re-edit that. But that's how you're going to get good data, rather than just asking a huge open-ended question where they can just go on and on and on and you won't be able to use much of it. It's better to ask specific questions with hopes of getting something back that you can use. So think long and hard about the questions that you ask. The next question we've got are, what are the song forms? So I'm going to assume that question means, what are the different types of song forms, not actually what does the definition of song form mean. But I will mention that. What are the actual song forms? Or what is a song form? You know, a song has a form. It has structure. There are many different kinds of song forms, and I'm not going to go into all of them right now. Any bookstore will have a songwriting book that will give you a rundown of all the song forms, and I've given you a guide to hit song forms that you can use. But a song form is going to have song sections within it, and those sections are going to be a verse and a chorus at the minimum. Some songs are a verse-refrain kind of song. That's the other major kind of song. And that was actually one of the earlier song forms, where you had a verse and it was all one verse. And then the refrain, which would be the hook or the title, would be maybe the last line that was sung, something like that, a verse refrain song form. And then there's the verse chorus song form. I do want to mention the pre-chorus and the bridge. A pre-chorus usually comes between a verse and a chorus. It leads into the chorus. Think long and hard about whether you need a pre-chorus. In fact, if you've written songs with pre-choruses, take them out. See if it doesn't make it better. A lot of the times, pre-choruses are just fluff. They don't really provide any new material. They don't provide any contrast, and they don't actually help to move into the chorus. So consider pulling your pre-chorus and seeing if the song isn't better that way. If it actually works and does lead into the chorus and help build up, then you've got yourself a good pre-chorus, and go for it. Keep it. A bridge, that's one of those things that you don't hear. You might hear in 50% of the songs. I don't know actually what the stats are, but a bridge is something, again, that's an optional song section. You don't have to have it. And a bridge usually comes in between two choruses towards the end of a song. Sometimes a bridge might simply be a solo section. Other times it might have new lyrical content, new melodic and harmonic content. And it, usually, it, like all the sections, it needs to contrast with what you have. So a bridge is an optional song form. So what are the song forms? Well, we can cut and paste, you know, till our heart's content. We can, you know, there's actually lots of stories of great songs that were made great by working with the form. So in today's day of cut and paste word processing, and you can do the exact same thing with your songwriting and your sequencers and things like that, taking a verse and seeing, do I need to cut it in half? Do I need to, am I repeating it too many times? Let's take the third verse out. Let's reverse the order of things. And you can probably find that there's a better way than what you've already done. Or at the least, you'll find out that the first way is the right way, which is a good thing. So moving on, we're going to go to the next question, which is, are lyrics that are poetic, although somewhat too obviously cynical, viable in a commercial sense? Let's look at that language again. Are lyrics that are poetic, although somewhat too obviously cynical, somewhat too obviously, I guess they're saying, are they that can have a range of cynicism in them? Are they viable in a commercial sense? The first thing I want to mention, the answer is actually pretty obvious. Go to the charts and find out. If you want to know, go to the charts and find out if there's any cynicism in the lyrics that you're reading. If so, then obviously they are commercial. The whole idea, though, of poetry and lyrics is something I want to touch on. I will talk more and more about this, but poetry and lyrics are not the same thing. A lot of people would say that lyrics are poetic in poetry. That can be the case, and it can also not be the case. The whole point of the difference is this. Poetry is meant to be read, meaning you can open a page of poetry and you can read it on your own time, and you can stop and ponder a sentence and really say, what does that mean? And you can allow it to take you through to loopholes through your mind where you just get lost in a line. Lyrics are meant to be, they're related to time. They're something that you hear linearly. You don't get to stop and think about them because the next lyric has already come and you can't control that. It's the tempo that's going to do that. So there's a huge difference there, that lyrics are something that need to be grasped easily the first time you hear them, and hopefully have enough depth that every time they are played after that, you will dig into it a little bit more and get more out of it. That way a song will have staying power. But you want it to make sense the first time. And I think a lot of people confuse poetry with songwriting, with lyrics in that sense. So that's something I just wanted to touch on. And the answer to the question is, if you want to find out if something is commercial, well, then see if it's being bought. And our final question for this issue, our very first issue of Samurai Songwriting, is, how do you write lyrics like Bruce Springsteen? And that's an excellent question because it's specific and you're going to get a specific answer back. First of all, if you want to model a songwriter like Bruce Springsteen, if you want to model specifically their lyric writing, notice it didn't mention melodies or chord progressions or forms. It was specific about lyrics. It was specific about the artist. What you want to do is you want to get that artist's catalog and you want to find great examples of that artist, of this case Bruce Springsteen. Find great examples of his writing and you want to transcribe it. What I would do is I would do it longhand. I would get a little notebook and I would start writing some of his lyrics longhand. And that's going to put it, you know, it's kind of like you're going to embody it. It's going to actually be as if you were the one writing those lyrics, and you might even gain some perspective into what it's like to be the creator of these lyrics. The other thing that you can do once you've had them written out is analyze them using something like our songwriting tool chart that we worked out today. Analyze the phrase length, the number of phrases, the rhyme schemes, the lyric content. Are there stories? Are there observations? Are there, you know, what is actually being said, and how is it being said? Take the word choices, look at the words, and say, what is the tone that this writer is getting across? And maybe you don't want to model everything so you become the next Bruce Springsteen or you write a lot of working class songs like he did, but you might start to see how, oh, these are the word choices, these are the verbs, the adjectives, things like that, the actual specifics that bring out this idea of, say, being a working class songwriter, which he's known for, you know? So that's the first thing I would do. I would write them longhand. I would analyze them using the tool chart. And I think that alone will give you a great idea and will give you great insight into how Bruce Springsteen writes songs like Bruce Springsteen. Thanks for listening to Issue 1 of Samurai Songwriting. We've covered a lot of great songwriting information that you can start to apply today. Right now, when you stop listening, would be the best time to integrate this knowledge into your songwriting practice. We discussed the Samurai Songwriter's Code, specifically respect, how respecting other musicians brings you self-respect. As the saying goes, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything. We talked about the psychology of a songwriter, the inner game of songwriting, how your language affects your communication with others and your communication with yourself. After all, a song is a means of communication. So we learned specifically how you may be leaving important information out of your communication. This is called deletion. We learned 5 types of deletions: simple deletions, unspecified referential indexes, unspecified verbs, judgments, and comparisons. We looked at a few songwriting tools. If you don't have them already, get the Complete Rhyming Dictionary by Clement Wood and the original Roget's Thesaurus. And begin using the Songwriter's Tool Chart on all of your favorite songwriters, as well as your own songs. Its purpose is to help you build contrast between your song sections, as well as create contrast between your songs. And it will show you how the greatest songwriters do what they do, so you can do the same. We covered the most important part of the song, the song title, and we learned several ways to create killer song titles as fast as possible, including rewriting an existing song title, borrowing from books and movies, paying attention to what's being said around you, and title mashups. We answered your songwriting questions, and we learned that the quality of your questions determines the quality of the answer. Some of the songwriting tips you learned along the way are when you wouldn't want a perfect rhyme, to keep the same rhyme scheme in your verses, how to create contrast between your verse and chorus by starting on a different chord, and how to give your chorus a lift by making the melody higher than the verse. The most important thing for you to get out of this issue is right here. The more you write, the better your chances of writing something great. Remember the 80-20 rule. Next issue, we'll discuss melodic techniques, several ways to make more memorable and entertaining melodies. We'll also discuss lyric writing, strategies for writing when you have absolutely no idea what to write, and how to create and release tension using balanced and unbalanced lines, plus a whole lot more. Until next time, remember, writing is its own reward. This is the way of the Samurai Songwriter.